This week on It's So Bad, we talk about the Metal Gear Solid 2 killer in Splinter Cell, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell on It's So Bad. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Mike.
Welcome, Chris.
Hello again.
We are back again, socially distancing still, but bringing you podcasts nonetheless. So, this week we're talking about a game, I believe that, Steve, you offered up to the Endless List. You're sacrificing.
I did.
To bring up the list.
I did. I was the one that made us all go through the pains of playing this gem from 2002. Is that what it is?
Yeah, November 2002 release for the Xbox. This game, Splinter Cell, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell, developed by Ubisoft Montreal, published by Ubisoft. We're adding this game to our Endless List, which is our list of good games, bad games, everything in between. We rank them based upon the history they've provided to video games, their gameplay, their graphics, their sound, their storylines, etc. We take that all into account as we build out our Endless List, which we added our 82nd entry last week at number 10, Bioshock. This week we're adding Splinter Cell, the original Splinter Cell, again, the November 2002 game. And just for some context with this game, 2001 happened. It was a year. Xbox was released. Halo Combat Evolved was released. Also, Metal Gear Solid 2 was released in 2001. 2002 brought us, at the end of the year, Splinter Cell. So this game came after Metal Gear Solid 2 and brought its stealth action to the Xbox, and then it would eventually be ported to the PC, PS2, and GameCube. And it would also appear on the PS3 in the Splinter Cell Trilogy release, which was the first three games of that. And this game also started a franchise. So how many Splinter Cell games are there? There's like a ton now, right?
I think there's like 8 or something like that. 10? There's a bunch.
It's ridiculous.
Is that so many? Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize there's that many. Holy shit.
Splinter Cell is considered one of Ubisoft's like premium properties.
Yes, so there was this game, there is Pandora Tomorrow was the second one, then they made Chaos Theory Essentials, Double Agent Conviction, Blacklist, and those are all the games. There hasn't been a game since 2013.
Yeah, I think these are effectively done now.
Yeah, and they made a bunch of them. They like made two different games for like the DS or the Game Boy Advance, so there's a whole bunch of different versions of these games as well.
Well, who knows?
But yeah,
maybe another Splinter Cell sneaking up on us. Who knows?
So how'd you guys play this game, Steve?
So I played it. So a little bit of context. So yes, this was my pick. I forced us all to play this. I remembered it a little bit better thinking back on it when I originally played it in 2002, because you mentioned that it came out right after Metal Gear Solid 2. And I think that I played Metal Gear Solid 2 and I was like, that was really cool. Stealth is really cool. I would like to play a more realistic version of this Metal Gear Solid game where I had to fight a guy on roller skates who was planting bombs. And what would like the realistic CIA NSA version of this look like? And Splinter Cell was apparently reading my mind and was like, hey, we're going to make that game. So I was very excited when this first came out. And all these years later, this game is a little rough. But I played it originally on the Xbox, and this time I played it on PC. So playing with keyboard and mouse was a little bit of a trip, too.
Why didn't you play with the controller? Was there anything specifically a reason why you didn't play with the controller on PC?
I was having a hard time getting my Xbox controller to work on PC, and I'm sure there was some sort of workaround I could have put into place, but I was like, you know what? I'll make do with keyboard and mouse. And it was a little weird, like for running, like controlling your speed, you have to use the mouse wheel, so you like scroll up to speed up and you scroll down.
Oh,
to
weird.
Speed.
That's very like 2002 PC game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's weird. And like other little quirks about like, you know, using like holding the control button to use an item versus like just selecting it and like clicking on it. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't super intuitive.
Chris, how did you play it?
I bought the PS2 version at a at a video game store for $3. $3?
So no, the
$4. There we go.
The Xbox version is known as the superior version. The PS2 and GameCube versions were developed by not Ubisoft Montreal, but Ubisoft Shanghai, which was kind of, I don't know if it's their budget studio, but like the lesser of their studios. So there's some, they like changed the placement of doors. Some of the enemies won't react to guns sometimes because they didn't properly implement them. And I think the lighting in the PS2 and GameCube versions is way worse than the Xbox version. So if you want to play this game, I'd recommend not playing the PS2 or GameCube versions. But yeah, that's where we are. That's the ones I played. I played the PS2 version. So.
Is the PC version now based off the Xbox version then, I assume?
I would assume so, because it's Microsoft and they were kind of doing that back in the day, even back then.
I think there are, I was reading about this earlier, I think there still are some differences though, but there's like some extra levels you get that might be shared with the Xbox version that are on PC, but there are some subtle like tweaks that they've put in there too.
Yeah, this game too took advantage of Xbox Live, so you could download levels. So it was like one of the first games to do that, because Xbox Live was like a year old at that point.
Yeah, that was that original Xbox Live. It was just like, yes, you are connected to the internet.
Yeah.
So the Xbox version has a nuclear sub level, whereas the PS2 and GameCube versions have the nuclear power plant level that's set in snow. That level isn't in the PC or the window or the Xbox version, I don't believe. There are some version differences in terms of the levels as well. But yeah, just in terms of this game, so I mentioned at the start that this game was originally supposed to be a Metal Gear Solid 2 killer. The whole reason why this franchise exists is because of Metal Gear, and the game designer and writer of the series of the original game has said explicitly, Metal Gear is a stealth action game. Every game that has ever used that idea owes its existence to the success of Metal Gear. So, like, 100% this game would not exist without Metal Gear Solid. That came out in 97 or 98. So, yeah, they started to come up with it. They took ideas from System Shock and Thief and Deus Ex for this game as well. There's some Deus Ex DNA in this game. Thief, because of the shadows and the way the lighting works. A big facet of this game in the gameplay is the fact that enemies won't see you if you're in the shadow, and there's a light meter that shows you how dark it is where you are, which is used effect.
I would say, even though Sam Fisher has a distinctive yellow... or not yellow, green night vision goggle that he wears on his head that shines with three green like bulbs out from the shadows. They can't see that.
Yeah, and that was specifically added in to make him look distinctive. Not functional whatsoever. But yeah, so I think the biggest gameplay thing that this game fools around with ideas around is lighting. So staying in the light in the dark and hiding there until a guy comes close enough where you can get him, or using night vision goggles and thermal goggles to see and look around in the darkness is where this game is trying to make its mark.
Yeah, a lot of this game is like you're walking down a hallway and there's like, you know, like a dark patch in the corner and there's a video camera going back and forth and you have to wait till the camera like looks to the side and then you run to the shadow and suddenly you're invisible again.
Yeah, and also, like, you need to, if you down an enemy, you have to place them in the shadows. Otherwise, there's an alarm that will sound, and certain levels have a certain amount of alarms that you can exploit. So there's, like, most levels have, like, three alarms. Some have zero. Some have one alarm that you can sound. I don't know if you guys know how alarms work, but if you leave a guy out, and you move physically to further in the level, there's like a checkpointing system where it checks if there's a enemy that's lying out in the open. And if you hit that checkpoint, then an alarm will sound. It's not time based.
Yeah. I was trying to figure that out. Cause I played the first level and I remember I knocked a guy out and he was kind of, wherever I knocked him out was kind of like off the beaten path. So I was like, oh, I'll just leave him here. And then I went to the next room and immediately got an alarm. And I was like, what? There was nobody else on that level. Like,
right, exactly.
Who could have found him?
Right.
Yeah, no, it just checks if the game checks if you left somebody out in the open when you reach a certain point. It's not like a patrol or people seeing it. It's just like a random check. And this game is weird too because it has like, it's very like tunnely, so there's like just hallways that you walk down and you have to like figure out how to get around obstacles and get around guys that are in the path. But yeah, most of those sections that are like in between checkpoints are only like two or three guys. There's never like anything more than four people at a time. It's always like specifically one, two, or three enemies that you have to deal with in a given section.
Yeah, and then you have to play the ongoing game of adjusting your speed to silently sneak up behind somebody and grab them, have their gun to your head, and like start interrogating them or just knock them out right away. It's a lot of trial and error with how fast you should walk and when you should start walking towards somebody.
I almost feel like when you mentioned playing it on the PC, Steve, like how you said like you can adjust your speed by clicking up the mouse. Like, I wonder if that actually mechanically works a lot better than like how awful it is trying to do it like on the PS2 controller.
I was wondering about that because I was like, this is actually kind of nice. I can like click it up one level and be like, I'm gonna crouch a little bit faster.
That sounds so much better. Oh my god.
The PS2 analog stick is so sensitive, and I figured that out while trying to do the lock picking mini game, because like you can on the analog stick I don't know how you do the lock picking in on the PC version with a mouse and keyboard.
It's WSAD.
That's it, and you just have to like keep tapping it.
Yeah, it's much less impressive. Not that it was impressive on the controller, but at least on the controller, you're like trying to like get the right angle on flicking the lock up. This is just like, oh, it's WWWW.
So the way lock picking works is that you put the analog stick in one of the four quadrants of the when you rotate it around, either the northeast, northwest, or whatever, you know, if you think about the circle of an analog stick, there's four different quadrants. You have to get it in one quadrant, then it shakes, and then you have to like very subtly go around, like nudge it to get it open. And sometimes it's difficult because it's so sensitive. At least it was in my playthrough of the lock picking. But yeah, it was. That, there's a lot of things that were frustrating about this game, and we mentioned the walk cycle. So the lock picking I felt was sometimes frustrating, especially if like there's somebody bearing down on you. But the walk cycle of people, of enemies, for some reason there was never a happy medium of you being able to sneak up on somebody and get them versus their walk speed being faster. It was always, they always seemed like they were too fast for you to catch up to them. So you had to go too fast, and then they'd turn around and they'd get alerted. And it was just annoying as hell.
Yeah, like they are always walking just slightly faster than you can safely like crouch and like sneak up behind them.
Right.
So like a lot of times I would have to be like slowly creeping up to them and waiting for them to like stop, and then I'd like close the gap a little bit, and then I would just like scroll up and like close the gap real quick as they're like, huh? And then I'd have them.
And I think we were playing that way mainly because probably I think Metal Gear Solid teaches you to play that way. But I think the way they actually want you to play is for you to wait in the shadows until they come, or knock out the lights, which is something you can do above the people, and then sneak up on them. Which I never thought to do.
There are so many instances in this game where there's just like something that they want you to do, and it's not entirely clear that that's the thing you're supposed to do. Whether it's like shooting out a light, or there's one section in, I think it's like the first or second level, where there's like a drunk guy on the street, and there's two cops like harassing him, and they're like, "We're gonna send you to jail, buddy. Like, you should be lucky. Like, you feel lucky that we're like, you know, taking care of you or something." And apparently, you're supposed to like go around, and there's like a ledge that you can like kind of shimmy past them, but it's like weirdly set below them even though they're like at street level, and so apparently you're supposed to like go along the side of this ledge and get by them, but there's like all these like beer cans or whatever nearby, so I thought I had to like throw a beer can to like set them off and make them walk away, but that just made them like hunt for me instead, so I was like, I have no idea how to get past this. I had to look it up, and this was like the first level.
There's some weird level design choices. There's when you're going to the Chinese embassy at the very end, when you like get to the Chinese embassy, there's like they make you like go up the scaffolding, and then you're like in these alleyways, and then you're like walking in this building. For some reason, there's an enemy in this abandoned building, and then you have to like do the rope slide across the ledge, and then there the alleyway goes and the street goes straight and makes a right, and I'm like, all right, so I have to go follow the street. And like for the longest time I could not figure out how to go further, because if you go around to the right where the street ends, there's a guy there and you can knock out that guy, but there's nothing else. There's like barricades. And I'm like, where the fuck do I go? And if you just look across from where you slid down, there's an alleyway. And I was like, this is just terrible design. I'm like, I could not see this alleyway for the life of me because it's so fucking dark in this game. And the street actually goes off in another direction. So why didn't you just light up where I was supposed to go? There's a lot of like pathing issues where I was like, I have no idea where I'm supposed to go at this point.
Yeah, it's funny because like, so I played this game and I played Chaos Theory, which is the third one. I think I played Pandora Tomorrow too, the second game, but I don't remember it. And in Chaos Theory, like there's more variety to how you go through the levels, and with this, it's like a pretty clear cut path most of the time. But right. The fact that you can't navigate that path easily for so much of the game is just like, what did they do? Like, did this feel better in 2002? I'm trying to remember, like, why I liked this game so much back then. And maybe it was just because I was, like, I don't know, 12 or 13 at the point. And I was like, cool, I'm a spy. This is real cool. I'm hiding in the shadows. But the mechanics of this game are just, like, I feel like I had to, like, break the game sometimes to get to certain places. I had to, like, jump off of something that I wasn't supposed to jump off of to, like, get to a platform.
Yeah, I felt the same way a lot of the time. Some of those levels, especially in those alleyway levels, you're like jumping on awnings. There's some awnings where you jump on where you're totally not supposed to jump on them, but you can jump on awnings. And I kept doing that to get around places. And the game lets you do it, but you're totally not supposed to be able to do that.
Right.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say like kind of going along with like the graphic – in environment, graphical issues, the environment. Like I felt like the zip lines were almost like impossible to see certain times. There were times like I would like walk out to like a balcony and I would just kind of like jump, like just, I don't know, hitting jump, and all of a sudden I would zip line and go like, oh, it's like, shit, I didn't even see that. And then it's like, which pipes you can climb or not climb feel like they were totally inconsistent too. Like you would see a pipe sticking out of the wall going like, oh, I can shimmy up that pipe because I've shimmied up a million other pipes already at this point. Oh, but this one doesn't work.
The worst thing about that, I think, is when there you get to an end path and there one of the places I was like on a roof. I was like, where the fuck do I go now? I don't know where to go. And then you have to like look at this one little smokestack and like do the wall climb thing where you're rappelling down the side of the building. And I was like, oh, that's a mechanic you introduced like 3 hours ago that you haven't used since then, that I'm like, I completely forgot that you can do that off the side of the building in this
level. Was that embassy level? I think I had that exact same situation where I was like, what? This is like a thing I can attach my like rappelling belt to? I didn't even know I had this rappelling belt. Like, what
right,
is this?
Right. So the pathing is frustrating. I think another thing that I found frustrating in this game was, doors. Like, it was cool that you could see inside doors, but sometimes there was no darkness to hide bodies, so you had to, like, bring a body through a doorway. And you have to, like, specifically, you can't carry a guy and open a door. So you have to do the animation where you drop the guy, open the door, do the animation where you pick up the guy, walk through the door, and drop him off. And that was super fucking annoying.
Yeah, I thought for sure I'd be able to carry a guy and open a door at the same time, but no. No.
Yeah, so
Sam Fisher can't do two things at the same time. Come on, that's his name, right? Sam Fisher. Good, yeah.
Good thing about this game, Michael Ironside's voicing of Sam Fisher. That's my takeaway.
I love me some Michael Ironside's gruff military voice.
A lot of this game and the level design in terms of like how it was like a tunnel you're walking through a lot of the time reminded me very much of a PS1 game. And I'm like, this game feels like a PS1 game. It does not feel open like a PS2 game would feel like. And especially even like texture details in some of the areas. And I don't know if this was specifically, because I've looked at the Xbox version. Xbox version looks so much nicer than the PS2 version and the GameCube version. I just think they did a really shitty job of porting this game to the PS2.
It's a very ugly PS2 game. And then, like, it only gets uglier when you turn on the night vision and put this, like, green vomit over the entire screen. It's just, oh, boy.
I was like, this looks
like something that was, like, thrown out on, like, it does look like a PlayStation, like an early PlayStation 1 game at points.
Right. I was actually playing Medal of Honor, the original Medal of Honor, for the Call of Duty podcast, and I was like, wow, this game reminds me of the original Medal of Honor for PS1.
You know, for a game that's supposed to have, like, really good lighting effects for the time, 2002, like, I was playing, there's the level where you're trying to break into Langley, the CIA headquarters, and it's, like, pouring rain in the beginning of it. And they tell you there's a vent you can go in, and there's, like, you have a time limit, but you can go through this, like, air conditioner vent and sneak into a less guarded area of the building. And I could not, for the life of me, see the vent and figure out how to get through the vent, even though I knew exactly where it was. It's like, all right, I have to climb up this thing, and then I'm going to walk over to this thing and climb on this ledge, and how do I get in there? And it was because if you didn't stand in the right part of it, you didn't get the, like, prompt to, like, lean down and, like, pull open some grate. And it's like between the night vision, the rain, and just like the pitch black, I was like, I feel like I'm looking at something and not seeing what's supposed to be like a very obvious like hint to get into the building.
I think like along the same lines, it was like it's the second or third level, but basically it's like you're kind of shimmying across a pipe and like you're kind of going from like one balcony to the next, and there's clearly Sam Fisher's legs and feet are above that balcony you're shimmying to, but you get stuck. You can't move. And I was like, wait, what? Like, and then like, you know, you gotta like do you whatever you hit, like circle, whatever, to kind of like kick your legs up to the pipe and then like shimmy across, like with like your legs like wrapped around the pipe too. And I was like, why do I have to do that? Like, I thought like I did something wrong, because I was like, he can fit over this balcony. Like, he's not getting blocked by it. Like, what is happening here?
Just that great 2002 era game design.
I would say there's one thing that we might not think about when we play this game is that some of the movement aspects in this game are actually pretty good for the time period. So, for example, there's mantling in this game, which wasn't a thing really back then. So, like, going over objects and, like, that wasn't a thing. So that's a prime example of good movement. I would say the wall jumping is fucking miserable in this game, because if you don't approach it at the right angle, the geometry like is like, I don't know what to do, and you bounce off in like a random direction.
Yes.
You can shoot yourself off of like balconies doing that too. You're like, I'm gonna run up this wall and bounce, and normally I'd be able to like do like a cool split and like climb up into something, but instead you just like fall off into the street.
Did you guys ever use the split attack, by the way? Doing the split on a hallway to attack an enemy?
I feel like I did it in the tutorial.
I think I did it like one of the early levels, but then like never did it again. Also,
there's
every time,
like one
split. I was like, "What you tool?"
Jean-Claude like Van Damme over here.
I think that in the game, there's one specific corridor where you're supposed to do that, but then it's like useless throughout the entire game, because there's one level where you walk past like prison cells, and there's no darkness. And you can just run up to the guy and punch him and knock him out. But you're supposed to do the split there, and that's like the only time in the game where you're supposed to do the split.
There comes a point in this game where you get so frustrated that you just stop doing stealthy things, and you're just
and you
like,
just kill everybody.
And you just kill everybody. Yeah. There's like the oil rig level. It's like there's like NATO jets coming in, and like people are shooting and everything. And I was like, well, if everybody else is shooting, I'm just gonna kill everybody right now and finish this level up real quick.
And that's like the third level.
Yeah, it's pretty early. You reach that breaking point very quickly.
Yeah, I thought that was really more of a penalty for shooting people. That it was like, because like they stress, like they're like, oh, you have a gun, but you don't want to use it. And then I was like, really? Because I thought it's a lot easier when I just shoot everybody.
Yeah, and there's one level where you can't shoot anybody, and that level sucks.
Is that the Langley level?
No, so that level you can't kill anybody, but you can like knock them out. There's another level where you're at, I think it's like the first embassy part. It might be another level, but you start off in an alleyway and you're not supposed to knock anybody out, and you're supposed to do everything stealthy and you can't have any alarms. But I just ended up punching everybody, walking up behind them and just punching them. So yeah, that thing was so finicky, walking up behind people and getting the prompt to grab somebody. Oh man, that sucked. And like to get that part wrong is like, that's like the stealth thing, right? So walking up behind somebody and grabbing them.
It's like literally physically uncomfortable to like the way you have to hold the PS2 analog stick, like how light you have to move it and keep it there is like physically uncomfortable for your thumb.
Yeah,
there was so much trial and error in this game that I had like two running save files going at all times where I could like, okay, I got past the guy in the hall who kept seeing me, and I don't know why he could keep seeing me, but he did. So I got into this next room. I'm going to save. Cool. All right, I'm in this room. Now I'm going to go into the vent, and oh, damn it, I can't figure out how to get into this vent. Spend 15 minutes getting into the vent. All right, I'm going to save again because I don't have to keep doing this. It was just a constant battle of trial and error where, like, 99% of the time it was error.
Yeah, yeah. They do give you some gadgets that are... that are interesting in this game. So one of the, I think the most interesting gadget is the distraction camera. Did you guys ever use that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, not very regularly.
So there's a camera where you can see stuff, which isn't really, I guess if you're playing like on an extremely hard setting, you want to see around corners so you don't get alerts. But the distraction camera, you can shoot at a wall. That's where a guy is. And then as he's passing by in a patrol, you can click. It'll show you what the camera sees. And then when the guy passes by, you can hit another button and a gas will come out. Or you can hit a button to make a noise happen. And he'll come to the camera. And then you can hit a button to gas him. So that's made things a little bit easier in the later levels.
I thought the best was the fiber thin like the door camera, because of something.
Yeah, that was good.
Wait, you're supposed to be stealthy. No, I didn't really think it was good. I thought it was shit because of like, wait, like you're shoving this through a keyhole and like it looks like it comes out the other end of the door, like almost like 6 inches. Like if somebody's in that room, like wouldn't they just like see like a weird black snake like basically coming through the door? You're doing a shitty job, Sam Fisher, being stealthy by like.
I think that people really do that in real life. They have those little pen things that go underneath the door, and they snake upwards, and you can see around.
I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, they definitely do that.
Yes, I do know people do that, but the execution in this game seemed a little overdone. Like, I don't think it needed to go out and as far into the next room as I thought like the camera was going.
I hate that some of the rooms they made you do that, because otherwise you'd be fucked. So you have to do it underneath every door in the game. Because some of the doors are like set up, whereas if you just enter the room, they'll see you. But if you put the thing underneath it, there's a time it'll like trigger an event where they start walking away from the door.
Oh, I didn't think it went into the door. I thought it went through like the keyhole or something like that. I thought it was like coming through the middle of the door, which is why I was like, what is this?
No, it definitely goes under the door, and then it's a fisheye lens. I thought that was pretty cool. But beyond that, there's that and the distraction camera. I thought were the coolest parts of this game.
And then you get we haven't talked about this yet, but all the like post 9/11 like counterterrorism, but like yeah, this is now like the NSA, so it's like technobabble counterterrorism. This isn't your standard, like, you know, it's like all the like state apparatus stuff in 2002 that everybody was living at the time. But it's just like very interesting to see this game talk about like terrorism and cyber warfare and like international politics in, you know, 2020, with all the perspective of basically 20 years looking back,
right?
2002, and there just was, like, oh, it's a trip.
There were a lot of I will say histrionics in this, where people are like exaggerating things to make an effect. So like, for example, the whole information warfare bullshit, where they're like, oh, they're gonna hack us and destroy our infrastructure. And it's like all this like, Tom Clancy does a lot of stuff where he's like, I'm making a lot of noise about this one particular thing about in international relations that people should pay attention to, and then it never happens.
Well, it's interesting because the story of this game is that you uncover this plot where, like, basically this Georgian, as in, like, Georgia near Russia, this Georgian billionaire becomes, like, the new president of Georgia by, like, some coup. And then he, like, declares cyber war on the United States with the help of, like, some rogue Chinese element. And it's like, how did all these people meet, first off? I wanna know that. And two, like, word? Georgia declared war on the U.S.? Like, the new billionaire leader of Georgia was like, no, I'm going for it. I'm going to declare war on the United States and attack them with a cyber attack against their military that is apparently very widespread and devastating early on in the game. It's like, yeah, how did this happen?
There's like all this like this like paranoia about the re-rise of the Soviet Union that's like sprinkled in with like the very beginning when the two NSA agents are stumbled upon this big, huge like army facility. But I guess what happens, and I don't think this is explained very well, is that so there was a coup. Nicholas Zod, the billionaire in Georgia, takes over Georgia and they invade like Azerbaijan, and there's like some ethnic cleansing that happens there, and that's why the NSA agents are infiltrating him to get evidence of this ethnic cleansing that's happening. And so they get evidence, and then George is like, "Well, we gotta stop the U.S. from releasing this information," and that's why there's this information warfare that happens, and there's like a Canadian hacker too that's sprinkled in for some reason, and there's the China, and the American soldiers are kidnapped by China for some reason.
This game goes all over the place. You're like in every conceivable political, geopolitical hotspot.
Right. And there's this whole, like, there's also, I feel like they sprinkle in, and Tom Clancy does this a lot, it's like this whole concept of American exceptionalism, of how America has like this role to go in and, you know, right the wrongs that other countries have done, and it's never like, oh, yeah, let's take a look at what the U.S. actually does, but let's make us be like the white savior that comes in and saves these countries. And that is always sprinkled into Tom Clancy novels.
Yep. Old man Sam Fisher, Uncle Sam. Sam, you see the connection. He's coming in. He's got a daughter. He cares about his daughter, though. He's coming out of retirement. He's here to right some wrongs for the world on the behalf of the U.S.
But just to be clear, there is no Tom Clancy Splinter Cell book. They made Splinter Cell for this game.
Yeah, this is a game.
So before this, Ubisoft had made Rainbow Six and Ghost Recon, and then they made this property specifically with Tom Clancy's approval, and they just attached the Tom Clancy name to it to be in like the world of Tom Clancy.
You made up some gruff Star Spangled bullshit. That's all you need to get my name on it.
Yeah, I mean, they had the license, and they were trying to figure out ways in which to get value out of the license, and they wanted to make a stealth game. So they're like, "Oh, we'll just put Tom Clancy Splinter Cell on here." That's actually what happens.
Did you guys ever play Ghost Recon? I mean, I know we've talked about doing the early Rainbow Six games, but like the history of Tom Clancy games is very interesting. Like there are so many of them. It's like Madden almost. It's like Madden for like international politics and spycraft.
Dude, when the original Rainbow Six came out, it was like such a big game on the N64. We definitely played the shit out of that game, Chris, back in the day. Original Rainbow Six.
Yeah, I played Rainbow Six. I played the original Ghost Recons. Like, I loved those games back in the day.
It was such a different type of first-person shooter for the time period. So to play like a more realistic first-person shooter during the N64 days was like was interesting. But that game, I can guarantee you, does not hold up very well.
Oh, no.
I feel like that game aged out like a year after it came out. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I would be interested to play those Ghost Recon games though. I have no clue what they're even like. So
you have like a fire team, and they'll be like, so there's a level that I played all the time because I think it was in like the demo for it, but there's like a medieval castle like town in like Eastern Europe, and you're trying to get in, and you have like a squad of three that are like riflemen. You have like a support squad with like a machine gunner and like a ammo guy, and then you have like a sniper, and you have to like control individual guys and set them up, but then like switch to the other squad, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to have like this team go in, and then I'm going to switch to the sniper and shoot a couple of guys, and then I'm going to switch to the support guy and like lay down some machine gun fire, but like you control all of them and you have to switch back and forth.
This sounds like it would never work on a PS2, but
no, it would never work. It's a PC game.
But yeah, I don't know if did you guys watch, I don't know if you have it in the PC version, but there is an interview with Sam Fisher on this game.
I did not see that.
And it happens in the Ubisoft offices. So you can watch that if you want. And he describes how he acted in the game, how he was used as a technical guide, and you know how it was really a great process to work with them. But it's pretty bad.
Wow.
As you can imagine. But yeah, so there's an interview with Sam Fisher. Michael Ironside's actually had a lot of input on the development of Sam Fisher in terms of what he looked like and how he would potentially act. It wasn't just the voice. He was actually used as a creative manner as well.
It's what Michael Ironsides would picture himself looking like if he was like an actual kind of yeah, shredded exactly. military guy.
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so I think now's a good time to get into our ranking conversation. I think we've done an accurate job of slagging this game. But just before before we get into where this game ranks, so just to kind of preface this conversation, this game sold 6 million copies as of 2005. So it sold a lot of copies. The PS2 version of this game, just the PS2 version, has a Metacritic score of 89. The Xbox version has a Metacritic score of 93.
Yeah, this game has a lot of glowing praise that came out around 2002 for it.
Right. In 2002, it was the second best game, second highest rated game on Metacritic for the Xbox. The only game that was above it was Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3.
This was above Halo?
For
wow.
No, for 2002. Halo came out in 2001.
Oh, I see.
For the year. Okay. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I was like, what? What, yeah. Five games come out in 2002?
So where does this game rank for you guys? And I'll give you my just, like, when I was thinking about this, where I think this game goes. I think, like, a game like Eternal Darkness is a more interesting game than this game, and I think it holds up better. But I also would say that this game probably goes above Zone of the Enders, which is number 72, number 59, and number 72. So somewhere in that range. I think Zone of the Enders is just so blasé of a game from start to finish that this game's more interesting. So it's in that, like, interesting zone between Eternal Darkness and Zone of the Enders. And if you guys disagree with me, let me know.
No, I don't disagree. I didn't realize how bad this game would hold up when I suggested it. Because we did Metal Gear Solid last year, and we were, like, talking about how, like, the stealth elements for it, like, probably are better captured in, like, a Splinter Cell game than a Metal Gear game, because Metal Gear does all these other things, too. So they're like, if you want a pure stealth game, Splinter Cell is probably your game. And I was like, oh, yeah, I played Splinter Cell. We should do that at some point. And, yeah, this game's real bad.
This game just doesn't hold up very well.
No.
Yeah,
and it's probably decent at the time, but it's just, I just can't imagine it being the second best game of 2002 on the Xbox.
I mean, I didn't play this game. I didn't play this game when it came out. Like, I just played it for the first time for this podcast, and like, even just thinking, I was like, God, this came out like several years after Metal Gear Solid, and it feels like it's a massively inferior game in every way. And just the character of Sam Fisher just is, maybe it's like because we're living in a very jaded year of 2020. Like, anytime Sam Fisher said a fucking word in this game, I was like, shut the fuck up. I can't fucking stand you. I was like, I'm gonna split jump you off like a building because I can't fucking stand you. So
I would also like, think about this though. We're in 2020, right? So like, I just started randomly Death Stranding last night. Think about Death Stranding or like a game like Sekiro that came out last year, and compare it to a game from 2014. Like, that jump is not that great. But think about, like, we just talked about last week, BioShock, which came out in 2007. The jump from BioShock to, or from Splinter Cell to BioShock, it's fucking, like, crazy.
Yeah, this feels like a game where they were like, they had just invented the computer, and they were like, what's the first game we can play on this?
I don't know about that, Steve.
I'm just saying, it feels really old.
It feels really old. It feels really, really old. It feels like a game from, like, 97. Like, before Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this game, you know, very rarely am I pushing to put a game way, way down on the list, so I think my vote is, let's put it real low.
So where do we think this game goes?
So you think it's above Zone of the Enders at 72?
Yeah, I think it's more interesting.
So let's compare it. So the next one above that at 71 is Thrasher, Skate and Destroy. And then above that is L.A. Noire, which I know is a notoriously hated game in the Merolda household. So let's talk about those.
I would put it above Thrasher because that game is like super frustrating a lot of the time. It has some interesting ideas, but I would probably put it below L.A. Noire, personally.
I think L.A. Noire is better. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think from a story perspective and from just a gameplay mechanics-wise, I was not as frustrated with L.A. Noire, even though that game doesn't work at all, in my opinion, from a gameplay perspective. I also don't think this game works.
Somehow this works even less.
I almost kind of feel like we're putting this too high, because like, we haven't really said one strong, redeemable thing about this game, and I'm like...
Michael Ironsides. That's it.
Well, yeah, you're probably right. Maybe it is too high. Maybe I didn't get as frustrated with this game as I did with Zone of the Enders. And Zone of the Enders probably has a more interesting story, even though that story is like, Zone of the Enders' story is just straight up a carbon copy of Mobile Suit Gundam. Like, 100% carbon copy, the exact same story of the original Mobile Suit Gundam.
Yeah, so, I never played Zone of the Enders, so I don't really have anything to say to that, but I'm like, I mean...
But that story's better than the hysterics around post-9/11 America, yeah. So... You know what's funny? It's not even like post-9/11 America. It's like late 90s America, because it's not like talking about like Islamophobia and like Islamic shit. It's more like the ex-Soviet unions, man, they're going to get together and they're going to pull some crazy shit on the Americans.
Yeah, how long was this
game in development for?
Right?
Right. Probably they cleared the lowest bar possible by not like leaning into Islamophobia in 2002.
Right.
But like, if it was a game that was like in development for like over a year, you know.
Yeah, it was probably in development for like 2 years or three years.
Yeah, so, you know. That's it was still fashionable to hate the commies in 2000, I think more so.
So where do we want to put this? Throw me a number. Somebody else.
Well, so are we entertaining putting it below Zone of the Enders now? It sounds like we are.
It's up to you. What do you guys think?
I would rather play a bad Contra game than ever play this game again. So, which Contra Hardcore being 73.
Do we want to put it at? I would put it above John Madden Football 93. I just my Magic the Gathering filter game.
Wow, this is a rarefied era we're in right now.
Fight to the bottom.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is this? I mean, this. I guess Jurassic Park Trespasser is probably unimpeachable right now as the worst. We have Spy versus Spy there. We could put it, you know, in the Spy neighborhood. We could have like a new Spy bottom of the list here.
It's way better than Spy versus Spy. I also thought this game was. I think that from a purely visceral perspective, I would rather play Monster in My Pocket. But at the same time, I think this game does more interesting things than that game does. And that's why that game's so low, is because it's just so fucking boring. And I think this game is... I think Splinter Cell is a more interesting game than Monster in My Pocket.
Let's put it above Magic the Gathering at 70, the new 74, then. That's my vote.
Let's do that.
I'd be good with that, yeah.
All right. Let's put it at 74. Congratulations, Splinter Cell. You are a top 100... best video game as of this recording.
I guess we have to do Tony Hawk 3 now, just to see like where that would go in comparison to this. Those are the two best games of 2002.
Yeah, for Xbox games. So
we're just gonna have to do a ranking on 2002, the year in games. We'll just like do a deep dive.
Well, we graduated high school that year, so we'll always have that.
Yeah, I don't even know what was video games back then. I was out of my Circuit City days at that point.
I believe I was in 7th or 8th grade. This was probably 8th grade that I was playing this.
Oh, you youngin. You young child. Well, cool. Well, thank you guys for joining me this week on the podcast. Again, if you guys want to check out the complete list of this endless list, it's linked in the podcast description. You can email us your questions, comments, or concerns to itsobadpod@gmail.com. Follow us and you can direct message us or send us your thoughts at itsobadpod on Twitter. And yes, we'll be back next week with another episode. But thank you, Chris, and thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I'm sorry I made us all play this game.
I'm happy. I love experiencing trash and everything in between. That's why this
game is so good. We need more games at the bottom.
It was unintentional, but I'm happy we're here.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week.